The Dharma talk will be about a half an hour, and then we'll have a chance to share some comments or ask questions. And I'll get that kicked off, but also Carol and Kevin may chime in on the question and answer session as well. So tonight's talk is about the Four Noble Truths. And I think many of you, maybe most of you, were here last week and heard Bob talk about Siddhartha Gautama's life and his search to really understand what life was all about, his search for freedom, and his search, or his ultimate enlightenment. And Bob had said that one of the reasons he loves that story is that it's such a human story, that it talks about someone who was surprised by some shocking things that he suddenly was exposed to in life. Some of us can relate to that feeling, maybe a sense of shock at how things are or how they change or deteriorate or perhaps turn out so differently than we imagined or expected. And I think right now we're living through a great example of this with COVID-19. After he was enlightened, the Buddha didn't teach initially. That group of ascetics that Bob talked about that he had lived and worked with before he went off and sat beneath the Bodhi tree and got enlightened, that group of ascetics asked him to teach several times. And when he finally agreed to teach, his first teaching was the Four Noble Truths. So it is an important teaching. It's one of the foundational teachings of Buddhism. And I've heard the teachings on the Four Noble Truths many times, and I want to encourage you to, maybe you have already heard it many times as well, but it is good to listen to it a lot of different times, because each time we listen to it, we're at a different point in our own lives, and we tend to hear things a little differently. And to listen to different teachers teach it as well. That can be really beneficial. We can kind of think of the Four Noble Truths as if the Buddha was giving us a prescription, or he was giving us some medicine for helping with our hearts. And he structured his teaching almost like a physician who was making assessing an illness. He spoke about these four areas. And the first was that there is suffering. And he was talking about those shared experiences that we all have, such as illness, aging, and death. But he was also speaking to the daily moments that we have in life where things are arising, maybe not as we had wanted or expected. He talked about the way that we respond to our experiences affects the suffering. And he talked about that there's a way to work with suffering that can ease the heart. And then he gave us some very clear instructions as to how to do that. So it was almost like he was structuring it like a diagnosis, right? He said, here are the symptoms, there is suffering. There are some underlying causes to these symptoms. There is a treatment that we can use to decrease or eliminate the symptoms. And here's your prescription, which was the Noble Eightfold Path. So let's start with the question. Wave or nod if you know that it's true that there is suffering in life. Okay, so most of us are acknowledging that that's something that we know to be true. That's part of our experience that we've had. So I sometimes think that maybe the Buddha started with the Four Noble Truths because he knew that suffering was an experience that most of us could relate to. And so therefore it created a doorway for him into these deep wisdom teachings, the things he had come to understand as he reached enlightenment. For some people, it can actually be a relief to hear someone say, yes, there is suffering, or unsatisfactoriness or pain in life. Yes, it is there. Some people have grown up in families or lived with people where those things happen, suffering happened and difficulties happen, but it wasn't ever acknowledged or talked about, that those things were avoided or swept under the rug or covered over in any variety of ways or distractions. So to call it what it is, to call it out, can be a clearing away of all the ways that we run from the inevitable pain and disappointments of life. The Four Noble Truths is a teaching about dukkha, which is the Pali word for suffering. And it's passed down to us through a sutta, which was a written version of the oral teachings that were told over many generations. So I'm going to spend a little bit of time on each of the Four Noble Truths tonight, but just again as a summary so that we know what these four are. The first one is there is suffering. The second is there are causes of suffering. The third was there is the cessation of suffering. And the fourth was there is a path to the cessation of suffering. So I really like how meditation teacher Gil Fronsdale talks about we take the time to look at the Four Noble Truths, to look at and understand suffering as a way to care for ourselves and others. Because suffering is central to the human experience, we value ourselves and others by looking carefully at suffering, both personal and collective suffering. We do this in the context of our meditation practice by doing it in a grounded way, a wise way, to understand how we can move toward a better future. And it actually does help us to prepare with care and love and rootedness for the biggest existential experiences of our life, aging, illness, and death. So with this and other teachings of the Buddha, our task is to consider it, to check it out against our own experience, not to take the words on faith, but rather work with it and see if the ideas that the Buddha offered ring true in your own experience. Throughout the course, Carol and Kevin and I all hope that you will listen to what is offered, not as if this is the way it is or this is a set doctrine, but to take it and apply it and see for yourself if it seems to make sense to you. There's a lot in the teachings on the Four Noble Truths, and I encourage you to just take in what you can and don't worry about it if you don't get it all or it doesn't all knit together nice and easily. You'll be getting something out of it, and you can just see what makes sense to you. So the Buddha's search was a noble search, and we can take a cue from that, that we too can learn to address and meet suffering in a way to come through to the other side of it. With dignity, we can practice and see that passing through suffering, we can come to happiness and no longer be subject to the vagaries or circumstances of life. The Buddha said that we all have the potential to do this. So the first noble truth was there is suffering. As people noted earlier, most of us can relate to that idea from our own experience. And the Buddha's teaching was that we should know there is suffering, to really look at it and to understand it better. And the Buddha was referring not just to the big suffering of life, but to the full range of stress and distress that can come up in life. So dukkha, that Pali word, has many translations. The Buddha used words like grief, mourning, pain, anguish, and distress. And he taught us that we should practice with the following specifics: birth, aging, illness, and death. He also taught that we should practice with associating with the things that we dislike and how we experience suffering by having to associate with the things we dislike. He also talked about practicing this and understanding suffering when there's separation from the things that we love, whether that's things or people that we love. There's suffering in the separation from things that we love. He also said that not getting what we want is an experience of suffering, and that we should also look at the five aggregates of clinging. So a good way to think of the five aggregates of clinging is this kind of body-mind complex that we're in, right? The combination of all of it together. The five aggregates are our body, feelings, perceptions, mental formations, and consciousness. So all wrapped up in this sort of body-mind complex, this experience of this has suffering. And it's also talked about in the teachings that we can group these into three categories. The first one is referred to as the suffering of suffering. So this is the physical and emotional type of suffering that we all know as humans. And so that's one that I think is relatively easy for us to relate to. The second is the suffering of change. So here we get a little bit more subtle with this idea that we suffer because we expect things to last, to stay the same, but this is not how our life unfolds. We age, we get ill, we lose friends, we get married and divorced, our president changes, a pandemic arises. So we want things to stay the same, especially when they're good, and we want them to last for us, but that isn't the reality of how our world operates. The third is the suffering of existence. And this relates to that final point in his list of things to work with, that is the five aggregates subject to clinging. So it's this idea that just by our very existence of being in these body and mind complexes, that this gives us the experience of suffering. So he asked us to take a look at our experience in all these different ways and to understand more deeply how we experience suffering. So in our meditation practice, when we look at our own range of suffering, we can also begin to tease out that there is something there, something maybe layered on, something about how we relate to it that actually does not need to be there. So an example of this for myself that I can share is that I get occasional knee pain, and it kind of comes and goes. It's not always consistent. And that is an experience of a physical sensation, right? I have, you know, this kind of sharp or kind of stabbing pain that comes up in my knee sometimes. And yet I don't just leave it there as a physical sensation. I try to practice with that, oh, it's just a sharp pain coming and going. But what happens for me is I start to layer on top of that my feelings and my worries and my fears about that, right? I'll start thinking, oh, I don't know if I'm going to be able to take that hike that I wanted to do this weekend. And then maybe that pain goes away for a little while and I'm out walking and I can feel it again. And then I start thinking, oh my goodness, this is never going to get better. And I'm going to end up having knee surgery. And how am I going to manage that? And so you see what I mean. It isn't just a physical sensation. I also add on top of it these other storylines that go with it. So our practice can help us to see more clearly what we may add on top of a baseline physical sensation. I want to also offer another word to you that is sometimes comes up when you hear about the First Noble Truth. So it's another definition of suffering, and it's the word unsatisfactoriness. So this is an important thing to consider. Some people might feel like, well, I haven't had any of the really big sufferings in life yet. I haven't lost anyone I love. I haven't had a terrible illness. But if you put the lens of unsatisfactoriness on, you can sometimes see deeper into your experience. Why is life unsatisfactory? Because nothing we experience is lasting or permanent. It's fleeting, and it changes. It is impermanent. So we search for something outside of ourselves, whether that's a relationship or a new car or that next job or the perfect apartment or an exotic trip, something that we believe will bring us happiness. But none of these things bring us lasting happiness. They're all subject to change from our initial attraction to or attitude about them. The partner that we thought was awesome starts to do all sorts of annoying things. The new car gets dented and scratched and goes out of style. That exotic trip is over so quickly. Unsatisfactoriness can show up as kind of a nagging feeling, like all these things that I've acquired or gained in my life just aren't really making me feel a sense of lasting happiness. The second noble truth is the causes of suffering. So the Buddha taught us that the causes of suffering are craving and ignorance. The Buddha's teaching was to abandon or let go of these causes. So in Pali, the word for craving is tanha, which literally means thirst. So you can think about it as craving or a thirst, like an unquenchable thirst. The sutra states, it is this craving that leads to renewed existence, craving of sensual pleasures, craving for existence, and craving for non-existence. So this is referring to craving pleasures, material goods, and even immortality. But our actual experience becomes one of suffering because these things can never fully satisfy us. So desiring them and expecting them to bring us happiness will only bring us suffering. And in thinking about that diagnosis idea, what the Buddha is now telling us is that here is what is creating the suffering. It has to do with how we meet our experience, how we crave more of what we want and think will make us happy and comfortable, and push away what we don't like and cannot face. And with those things that we want more of, we cling to these, wanting things to be permanent, solid, enduring, not seeing them for how they really are, continually shifting and changing. Those three areas that the sutra calls out are craving for sensual pleasure. So this is one that I think it's easy to kind of relate to. It's the like eating delicious foods and enjoying comfortable clothing that keeps us cool when it's hot and cozy when it's cold outside, and having comfortable beds with mattress toppers and high thread count sheets, things like that, that we crave, that we feel we have this desire to feel good, and we think we have a thirst for something that's outside of us is going to help us to feel good. And then there's the craving for existence. And this is our craving to be alive, to be somebody, to get people's acceptance, to even be immortal. So this is what drives the social media industry. How many likes can I get on Facebook or Instagram? It's what drives our striving to attain a certain status in life, make our life feel important somehow, even try to make our mark by making the world right or putting our names on buildings. We think that we need something outside of ourselves to make us feel whole. And the third point was this craving for non-existence. And that's really about our craving to feel nothing or to turn away from the self in some way. So this can range from really simple moments that maybe we can relate to, like a time that you felt so extremely embarrassed that you just wanted to disappear, all the way up to more extreme forms like leading a really high-risk lifestyle that you know will kill you, or even suicidal self-loathing. And sometimes it just shows up as a desire to not feel anything. There are so many ways that we can lose ourselves in an attempt to not feel anything. And this desire to disconnect really creates suffering, as it distances us from our own hearts and from other people, and it keeps us from loving ourselves and accepting ourselves and others just as we are. On a practical level, how do we begin to work with these ideas of the causes of suffering? One really simple way is just when we know that we're suffering, we can ask ourselves the question, what is causing my suffering? We can bring awareness to it and notice what is happening and then learn to let it go. So an example of this is I have a lot of suffering when I'm in traffic. And so if I can catch myself and say, you know, what is causing this distress that I feel? Then I can identify, it might be like, oh, I'm feeling really tense or I'm feeling really agitated. And then I can ask myself why. And then I'll realize like, I'm in a big hurry and this traffic is frustrating me. So I have a desire or a craving to have things move faster, to go more smoothly, to not be held up. And I cling to that as if this is the way it should be. This traffic should be moving faster. So my practice helps me to see that the traffic for what it is moving at this pace. And to let go of my need or my desire for it to move faster. Recognizing that in wishing for it to be different or craving a faster traffic flow, I am creating suffering for myself. The traffic isn't creating the suffering, I am. So there's other cravings that we know can lead us to suffering. That's things like cravings for food, nice clothing, cuddly pets. And it's not that those things are problematic in and of themselves. It's our craving or our unquenchable thirst that can cause suffering as we interact with those things. So the first scoop or two of ice cream is really yummy. But if I keep eating that whole pint, I will begin to not feel so well. The thing that was spectacular turns into a stomach ache and I'm suffering due to my clinging and wanting more and more of that. So compulsion or preoccupation with substances, things, people, it has this sort of inner burning quality to it that causes us suffering. And this can really be seen in a variety of addictions, whether that's addictions to drugs or alcohol or things like workaholism. Another cause of suffering is referred to as ignorance. So ignorance relates to not seeing the world as it actually is. And the Buddha taught that before we learn to settle the mind and develop the capacity for mental concentration and insight, our minds are essentially obscured with a lot of beliefs and attitudes, preconceived notions, as well as karmic imprints. And this conditioning makes us unable to grasp the true nature of things. So greed, envy, hatred, anger, all those kinds of things result from this ignorance. Ignorance also causes us to see things as permanent and enduring, when actually everything in life is constantly changing and in flux or flow. So with mindfulness practice, we can begin to look at the nature of our desires or cravings. What are we holding on to and what are we pushing away? And also, where may our understanding be clouded or distorted by strong emotions like anger, hatred, jealousy, or fear? Are we compulsively chasing after the next great thing that will bring us happiness? Can we see how our own response to people or experiences may be adding suffering on top of a situation? In meditation, can we gently notice if we're holding tight to an idea or opinion or expectation of how something or someone should be? With practice, we can learn to see more deeply into our experience and perhaps even below our craving. As we settle the mind, more can be revealed to us about suffering and its causes. The third noble truth is the truth of the cessation of suffering. The Buddha's teaching was to notice that suffering can lessen and ultimately cease. So in our analogy of the diagnosis, this is him telling us there is a treatment we can use to heal our hearts and lessen suffering. So this truth says to us, take notice. There is a way to work with suffering. And this has to do with bringing awareness to the mind's conditioning. So I want to read a little piece of a longer written poem, I guess you might call it, that was written in the 1800s by Pachul Rinpoche. So he was a wandering master in eastern Tibet, and he was beloved by people and renowned as an enlightened vagabond. And so he wrote this poem that was called Advice from Me to Myself. He actually wrote it for a friend of his, a fellow practitioner, but he wrote it as if it was advice to himself. And it's so humorous how he starts it out. The very beginning of it says, "Listen up, old bad karma patrol, you dweller in distraction. For ages now you've been beguiled, entranced, and fooled by appearances. Are you aware of that? Are you? Right this very instant, when you're under the spell of mistaken perception, you've got to watch out. Don't let yourself get carried away by this fake and empty life." And it goes on and on for many stanzas about all the ways that we get swept up in this life and in distractions and in busyness and in thinking things outside of us are going to create happiness for us. So I love how he calls out, right in this very instant, when you're under the spell of mistaken perception, you've got to watch out. So this truth has us pay attention, take notice, and watch out. When we take care to really look at and understand suffering and its causes, we can work through it to the other side. So bringing awareness into things like stress and discomfort and pain can change our relationship to it. When we bring awareness to what is hurting, we can lessen its hold on us and make space for a more skillful response. In the Buddha's experience, it was practicing to the ultimate point of achieving enlightenment, becoming free of all the levels of suffering that we know in this life. In achieving nirvana, he reached an experience that was free from suffering and the worldly cycle of birth and rebirth. This complete cessation of suffering is the result of deep practice that eliminates and frees us from the cravings and root ignorance, that helps us strip away the layers of greed, hatred, ignorance, and uncover or set free our true nature. The Buddha taught that we all have this potential to reach the end of suffering. On a practical level, it means bringing awareness to suffering and our reactivity around it. Can we develop our practice to the point where in our day-to-day lives, we gradually learn not to pick up or get tangled up in the attitudes and behaviors that lead us to suffering? Insight teacher Joseph Goldstein encourages us to notice what wanting feels like, and then to notice what it feels like when wanting passes, as it will, because everything is impermanent. So it's important to recognize both wanting or craving and when wanting has passed, to really know both of those experiences. And the awareness of the impermanence of these experiences can help loosen the bonds of craving and attachment. So with awareness, we can learn to lessen suffering. And this is the deep work of our practice. And it leads us to the fourth noble truth. The fourth noble truth is the path to the cessation of suffering. And it charts the method for attaining the lessening of suffering, known as the Noble Eightfold Path. The Buddha's teaching was to develop the path. Here, the Buddha gives us instruction or the prescription for how to lessen and ultimately end suffering. how through practice we can uncover and uproot the layers of cravings, greed, ignorance, and reach freedom from suffering. The steps of the Noble Eightfold Path are wise understanding, wise thought, wise speech, wise action, wise livelihood, wise effort, wise mindfulness, and wise concentration. So we'll be covering these over the next 3 weeks and how we can work with these practices to make progress on the path. And as Gil Fronsdale said, how we can practice in a grounded way, a wise way, to understand how we can move through suffering toward a better future.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.